Hi, this is Stephanie Gunning. We're lucky today to have Mike Larson with us. Elizabeth Pomada sadly is not feeling well and she lost her voice, so doing this call was not possible. So for people just coming on, we're actually speaking today with Michael Larson. He is a co-agent with Elizabeth Pomada, who also happens to be his wife. They founded Larson and Pomada Literary Agency in 1972. And you're based in San Francisco, isn't that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So but you both worked for different major publishers in New York before you became literary agents, right?
Yes, correct.
Cool. Yeah, I have here that you worked with William Morrow, Bantam, and Pyramid, which became Jove. So this is Northern California's oldest literary agency, and you sell books mostly by new writers to, and you've sold them to more than 100 publishers, so you're very successful. You are a member of the AAR, which is the Association of Authors Representatives. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what does that mean to be a member of the Association of Authors Representatives?
Well, it means you have to become a member, you have to have sold a certain number of books in a certain amount of time, which suggests competence. Also, they have a canon of ethics, and so that keeps members on the straight and narrow. They're not allowed, for example, to take reading fees.
Right. I always tell people that if somebody wants to charge you money to read your book proposal that they might represent, then you're dealing with a scam artist.
I have to believe that there are good agents who charge fees. I don't know, because one charges a fee, one is bad, but it would be more important then, I think, Stephanie, to get a list of the books they've sold to make sure that they're really functioning agents.
You know what, I think, but you know what, new writers get taken advantage of an awful lot,
yeah.
You know, because there's this perception that there's no way into this business, and actually I'm here to disabuse people of that notion, so I hope you can help me with that.
writers today, I think it's the best time ever to be a writer, and this is a tremendously empowering time for writers.
Why do you say that?
There are more publishers around the country. There are more agents than ever, more than 2,000 in the country. More than 90% of them must find new writers to make a living. There are more subjects to write about. It's just more ways to make money from writing. It's a great time to be a writer.
I agree, because you also have different choices about your format. I mean, you can go the mainstream route, work with a literary agent, go to a publisher, and go through a process. You can also self-publish or do a through a printer or through one of these services. So if you hit a brick wall, you can proceed, you know. And
there is no brick wall.
There is no brick wall.
The phrase unpublished author is now obsolete. The only thing to get published is a manuscript. There are POD publishers, print-on-demand publishers, that will do it for free.
Right.
As well as make it available as an ebook. So, there's no way not to be published. And which of the many publishing options, more options than ever, writers use depends on where they are in their career, how well they write, how commercial their idea is, and how able they are to promote it.
Right. So, as an agent, do you ever take on anybody who has self-published first and then done fairly well, and then you can find them a publisher?
Well, 1977, there's a piece in the San Francisco Chronicle about a book called Earning Money Without a Job, The Economics of Freedom. It was a self-published book by a guy named Jay Levinson. And I saw the article in the paper and sold the book to Hemi Holt, which still publishes it. And then he wanted to write a book about marketing for small businesses. And he wanted to call it Secrets of Making Big Profits from Your Small Business. That's an okay name. It's not great. But in his proposal was the phrase guerrilla marketing. And as soon as I saw that phrase, I knew that had to be the title. His title became subtitle. There are now more than 40 books in that series.
Including Guerrilla Marketing for Writers, which you wrote with him, right?
Right. Kind of let me use the brand that he's been building for 30 years now.
Now, for people who are unfamiliar with J. Conrad Levinson, this is one of those all-time great series, and he's got several books for writers, actually. I think there's more than one. There are a few, but guerrilla marketing for small businesses, guerrilla marketing for writers, and so on. So you should definitely go look for them. But he's a great model to follow when you're looking at how to promote your books.
Yes, most if not all of his books have ideas that writers can make use of. There are 100 weapons in guerrilla marketing for writers, and most of them are free. I mean, there's more ways to promote books than ever. And the web is the new publicity. It's cheaper and faster than publicity, which is cheaper and sometimes faster than advertising, spending money on advertising.
Cool. So, now you also wrote you've written several books. So let me just talk about some of your titles. You wrote How to Get a Literary Agent, and you wrote a book called Literary Agents, What They Do, How They Do It, and How to Find and Work with the Right One for You. That's kind of what our topic is tonight.
How to Get an Agent is the third edition of the book with the previous title.
Oh, I see. Got it. Okay. And you also have a book on how to work with a collaborator, somebody like me. And you've also written a series of books on Victorian architecture with Elizabeth, the Painted Ladies series. And you wrote a book called The Worry Bead Book, The Oldest Way to Beat Stress. So, in fact, you've had the experience of being an author. You've had the experience of being a collaborator. You've had the experience of being an agent. So you really know this business inside and out.
And you learn things from doing things in different ways. Elizabeth and I are both writers, of course, and so we really empathize with writers. Writers spend their lives getting rejected. Well, agents do too, for that matter.
That's true.
I mean, the last thing we want to do is cause a new writer pain. We want to help them if we can. So I think it gives us a sympathy with them that maybe agents who haven't been authors don't have.
Right. Right. So I also want to give the address of your website because as I was noodling around on it earlier, I saw that there were a lot of really fantastic resources there for writers. So it's Larsen, spelled L-A-R-S, like Sam, E-N, hyphen, Pomada, P like Peter, O-M-A-D-A, .com. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, very good. So people should definitely go to that website and look at all the different resources for writers. When you find an agent who is as generous as these people are, you'll find that they really want to help you, and they do it by making it all available, you know, right there on their website. Now, you guys are also, you and Elizabeth are also the founders or the co-founders of two different writers' conferences, the San Francisco Writers' Conference, which takes place in February, and I'm going to mess up the name of the new one.
It's the San Francisco Writing for Change.
Writing for Change conference, and that takes place in the summer, and I believe this year was the first one, just a couple of weeks ago, actually. And so a lot of the people, just so you'll know, Michael, a lot of the people who are the subscribers on my list are life coaches and therapists and healers, and they're nonfiction writers, but they are literally in that category of writing for change. Many, many of my clients are people who want to contribute and make a difference to the world through their books and by speaking and teaching. And you know, one of the issues they have is creating a marketing platform, but you know, they also, so many of them can produce a beautiful manuscript or a thoughtful proposal, and let's just not even focusing on that piece of the marketing platform for now. What is it that when you read a book proposal makes you think, this is a book that's viable, this is a good idea? You know, how do you make that assessment?
Well, it's very, very subjective. Agents and editors turn down books, turn down bestsellers even, because it is subjective. The covering letter is a good place to start. If there are obvious mistakes in the covering letter, agents and editors won't get past that.
Mm-hmm.
The prevailing wisdom being, if they can't write a letter, they couldn't write a book. So it's really important that that the covering letter be impeccably written. I recently came up with a kind of simple way to write a letter. I now say it's as simple as H B C. The hook, the book, and the crook. A paragraph about what's most exciting about the book, and then a paragraph about what the book is, how long it'll be, what you're ready to show, and then a paragraph about the writer, the cook, your experience, the track record, what they'll do for most of the book, that kind of thing. It's just a one-page letter. The hook, the opening hook, could be even a slice of copy from the book. If one has a referral to an agent, then that should come even first. Always the best thing to put at the beginning of the query letter is, Joe Smith, suggest I contact you.
Mm-hmm.
The more important that person is, a client or somebody in the book business, the more closer attention and faster attention agents will.
And the reason why that person's reputation is a signal to you that this is a person, an author to take seriously, is because it means that they're more educated about the business, or you know, what is that clue?
Well, they've been published in the field. In other words, if a published mystery writer has sent somebody to us, and that mystery writer has read the book and thinks it's publishable, Elizabeth wants to see the whole manuscript. Usually she likes to start with just the first 10 pages.
So it's like a pre-screening process to have a referral. Sure.
I mean, the reality is agents and editors only read far enough to make a decision, and usually it's not very far, which is why, for example, with novels, you have to hook readers at the beginning as strongly as it's possible to do, and not let them go for as long as they got to keep turning the pages. It's the ultimate.
So sometimes flooding people with information in a book proposal is too much information. It's going to stop them. It's going to overwhelm them.
Indeed. Yes, the proposal should have as few words as possible. You asked me what excites us about proposals. Let's just say me.
Yeah, let's say you.
The title. Titles are extremely important.
Mm.
People have seconds in a bookstore to look at a book. They say picking up a book is half the battle. So in the title, particularly for a nonfiction book, is just very, very important in getting an agent's attention. The writing should be impeccable. A proposal, the sample chapter, should be as enjoyable to read as it is informative. A promotion plan. I usually tell writers that the content of most books, have two books with a wide national audience, the content for most of them is 10% of the challenge of making them successful, and promotion is at least 80%. Somebody going into a highly published area, parenting, sports, baseball, whatever, gardening, they've got to have a great idea, and they've got to be able to promote it. Their publishers want authors. New York Times.
Yeah, so
have a national platform.
So let's say I'm a nonfiction writer. I've got a great book idea, but I have no platform. Should I put it on the shelf for a year while I build one, or what should I do?
Okay, I think writers in that situation have three options. If they have enough promotional ammunition and they want to be published by a New York house, then they can approach New York houses. If they don't have enough promotional ammunition, then they have two alternatives. Either aim for a medium or small-sized house, a niche publisher, university press, or take the time to build a platform, get whatever new experience you can, test market the book. It's another great opportunity. There's more ways to test market books than ever. Articles, talks, and even the manuscript itself. Even if a writer has a publisher, when the manuscript's finished, the author's giving talks, I encourage him to test market the book. Just even selling the manuscript in a loose leaf for $20. Or if they don't have a publisher, test market is a print-on-demand book. Get feedback on it, both the experience the people have reading it and the effect it has on their lives.
Now that's a really interesting statement, because I also encourage people to go out and get feedback, particularly if it's a nonfiction advisory book, because there's stuff that works in our mind intellectually, but when you mix it up with real lives, you start getting a different kind of question back from your audience, right?
Well, yeah, that makes sense, and different audiences will respond to things differently. But talking, there's a kind of circularity, Stephanie. books are a good way to get talks. It's the best calling card somebody can have. You put a book on somebody's desk and you've got instant credibility.
Yes.
But talks are a good way to develop books. The books I've written about proposals and agenting and promotion came out of talks Elizabeth and I have been giving these past decades. So a good way to make sure your anecdotes have maximum impact, to develop the most felicitous way to express your ideas. And in effect, really creating bias when it does come out.
So, as an agent, when you see somebody's marketing plan and you see they've given like three or four talks, is that sufficient, or are you looking for a certain frequency or a size of the audience? What are you looking for?
Well, the only way agents can make a living. Thank you. I'm sorry, what was the question, Stephanie?
If you're looking at somebody's promotion plan,
right.
Are there some milestones or measurements you look at as a baseline?
Yeah, if somebody wants to be published by a big house and it's a kind of a how-to book or a book, the promotion for which has to be author-driven by talks the author makes, then I think four numbers will be important to big houses. The first one's optional. And that's a matching promotion budget. Few writers can have that.
Right.
And so that's optional. If they can't, they can't. Most can't.
Right. But
the next three numbers, I think, will be really important to publishers, to big houses. And they are the number of major markets authors will get themselves to on publication.
And major markets mean big cities like New York, Boston, Washington, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
There's a list of them.
Yep.
In the back of Guerrilla Marketing for Writers.
Great.
So the number of talks they'll continue to give a year, and the number of copies of books they'll sell a year at their talks. If authors can get paid to speak, most of the money to be made in publishing shouldn't be from royalties, but from talks and back of the room sales.
Right.
That's the model that big houses work on now.
Right.
Now, that's true for all books. It's not true for A&E reference books. It's not true for literary books. There's a bunch of books it's not suitable for.
And it's probably not true for fiction.
Correct. It's absolutely not true for fiction.
Right.
But even so, even editors like fiction novelists who have a platform of sorts, who are writing reviews, posting information on related sites, I think, online promotion is becoming more and more important. A strong online promotion plan is essential now. And it's even more important for novelists because they have relatively few ways to promote their books, which makes the website more important.
Right. So people must fundamentally have a website.
Yes.
And you could set yourself up with a blog, but it should be a blog that's really active, right?
Yes, you have to post to it at least, I think, once a week is the... At least.
At least, yeah.
But it's a good way to first market a book.
Right.
It's all good.
So giving some of your information away for free to get a response, or even just let's say you're not a speaker yet. So go and give some free talks, but sell the manuscript in a simple binder at the back of the room, just to see what happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And be specific as you can in the kind of feedback that you want from it.
Yeah.
Again, there's two kinds of feedback. Feedback on how much they enjoyed reading it, and feedback on how it helps them. It tends to be that kind of book.
Right.
The model for this are really the Chicken Soup guys, Jack and Mark. They have a panel of 40 readers, and the readers grade every story on a scale of 1 to 10, and they just use the 9.5s and 10s. So I think that's the way to look at that challenge, getting feedback on your work.
Right.
And our website has a list of sort of the books, have a list of different kinds of readers that writers need. And really important among them is a critique group that gets together every week or so, especially for novelists, and critiques each other's work.
Right.
That's important.
And helps you raise it to the next level.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Writers tend to be so close to their work that they can't really see it. You need objective eyes.
Right.
What we really see that is with titles. As important as they are, most writers, including me, are too close to their book to have the creative distance they need to come up with the best possible title. The metaphor that I thought of is sort of like being an astronaut in space in a spacesuit. You're looking back on the Earth. that's the kind of distance you need to and look at something creatively.
I noticed that on your website you have a three-part statement. It was understand, develop, and commit.
Yes.
And I thought that was really interesting. What do those represent for you?
The first thing, the three parts are sort of understand how publishing works. So it provides a kind of perspective on publishing, also on agents. And the second element is the develop your craft. Get good at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is make a commitment to your craft and to your career.
So that means take the steps to learn and grow and put it out in the world. And
social networks is hugely important.
Yeah.
And made easier than ever because of technology.
So how should a first-time writer evaluate what agent to approach?
Another reason why now is the best time ever to be a writer is there's more ways to find out about agents than ever. The website has a list of like 11 of them, and that list is in a couple of my books. They're all over the place. So finding them is easier than ever. Getting one is more of a challenge than ever. And that's because there's a growing gap between the kinds of books, ideas, quality writing, and promotion that new authors have to offer and what New York houses want.
Mm-hmm.
The more and more publishers will be, more and more writers rather, will be starting with smaller publishers and kind of working their way up.
And that's because so few self-published authors like take the time to get the real editing and take the time to develop their material. Really,
more authors will start out with either self-publishing with small presses and it's like to test market themselves and their ideas.
Right.
And then work their way up. They kind of literally reaching that way.
So they're not really ready yet. They're not ready yet for an agent or a big publisher. Yes.
Yeah. That could be the case. But if they conscientiously getting readings about their work, they should have a sense of that. Another reason why now is the best time ever to be a writer is that there are more models for writers to follow, both in terms of books they want to write and authors and their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So the information's all out there, and it's all free. It's all on the web.
Right. So when they're trying to find the right matchup with an agent, what's the best way to do that?
Okay, what's the best way to do that? Well,
if you go to a writer's conference, for example, I don't know how many different agents come to your writer's conferences.
Well, two different conferences. The February one is the big one. It's something called Speed Dating with Agents, where writers get to make 3-minute pitches one-on-one to like a room full of agents.
Wow,
so
that's great.
A lot of them. We got like 16 or so, 17 maybe folks signed up for next February, and there'll be more.
How many authors are actually sitting there pitching their work?
Well, 300. I mean, it sells out every year. So.
So 300 authors are essentially competing for 16 agents' attention.
we break them up into groups of three, so it's
right.
More complicated than that.
But yeah, okay, but something like that. So,
right.
So presumably those agents are there in order to find new talent. So they're open, but at the same time they're also being flooded with information. So that short pitch is probably incredibly important.
Well, it's crucial, yeah. I mean, Catherine Sands, a New York agent, comes out and does a session on pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the beginning of the conference. And this way writers get a chance to write their pitches and practice them, give each other feedback on them.
Mm-hmm.
And also Saturday night, we do a pitch contest. So people get to try them out. And whether or not they win, their pitches are always improved significantly.
You know, so that's great, because what you're really teaching then is a whole bunch of different skills that writers need to learn.
Right, and then the next morning they'll be able to pitch. That afternoon even, there's an editor, speed dating with editors, and they get a chance to pitch their books there and then the next day, next morning to agents.
Right. So most literary agents like you have their own website now, which pretty much tells you about them and the kind of work that they do.
Sure.
Then there's the traditional route of the literary marketplace, where people put a little blurb about themselves with their address and their submission guidelines.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different directories. I think Jeff Herman's maybe the best because he really gives people a sense of what personalities agents have because of the questions he asks them.
Is that in his book or is that on a website? Yeah.
Well, I think you buy in two editions. You can buy the CD-ROM or without one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if Jeff makes it available just as a download.
Right. So a CD-ROM though would be very useful because you could just you wouldn't have to retype it all the time. Yeah. And
right.
And so.
And the other book that's strong for a different reason is Guide to Lunar Agents, the Writer's Digest book, because it lists all agents, it separates paying from non-fee paying agents. It lists all the subjects that they're interested in, and then after that, it lists all the subjects and all the agents they're interested in. So if somebody are writing a book about painting, they can look at all the agents who are interested in the subject of parenting.
Right.
It's a good way to zero in on potential.
Now, you could also go to a bookstore and look at the acknowledgments of books that you respect.
Absolutely, yeah, that's definitely a valid way. Do go to writers' conferences and meet authors. I recommend that writers come up with a list of agents and approach as many of them as they want simultaneously.
Do you feel that they have to say to you, I'm on a multiple submission?
Yes, that's fine. It's not a problem. They should say that, just so agents and editors know.
Right.
I've heard agents say, well, if you have three agents you want to approach, you should divide it up into two or three parts, so in case you get some feedback that might affect how you approach other agents. But it depends how much confidence a writer has in their work.
Do you think that that's a good idea, to divide your material so you can get different feedback?
Well, it depends on how strongly they feel it's 100%. If it's really ready and they don't feel any feedback, then just do it all at once. Speed up the process.
Agents
you can approach are just online query letters. You can certainly do that to us.
Right. Some agents only take electronic now.
That's definitely a growing trend. Sure.
Yeah.
And I do. Liz and I work differently that way.
Mm-hmm.
If promotion's important to a book, I'll ask to see a promotion plan.
Right.
After looking at that, I feel like I can help a writer, I tell them to email me their plan as one word attachment.
Right.
So,
right.
I'm usually looking at whole novels for fiction, you know, fiction and memoirs, and she's not downloading whole books.
Right, because she doesn't want to sit there and print. So a fiction agent may have different requirements in this way than a non-fiction agent. And you do mostly non-fiction, if not exclusively, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We do fiction as well, but we sell mostly non-fiction. There are many reasons why, at the beginning of their career, I think non-fiction writers are luckier than novelists. It's easier to write, it's easier to sell, and more agents do it, more publishers do it, it's easier to promote. It's easier to build a career out of by giving talks and selling CDs or other products one can make. So
the other way to meet agents, I think, is just through your network of contacts, other writers. And you should,
absolutely.
And sometimes you might, I mean, well, I live in New York, so there are an awful lot of writers, but sometimes I'll be at a cocktail party or something, and I'll just bump into a doctor or somebody who has a sister who's in publishing or whatever, and we always get into a conversation about it. You never know who knows an agent.
Absolutely right. I think being as visible as possible is important.
Yeah. I think you have to be willing to put it out there that that's what you're looking for.
Well, it's interesting you say put it out there, because that reminds me of the word passion. And I don't believe that money rules publishing. I believe that passion rules it. The money follows the passion.
Yeah.
People, editors and agents, love to get excited about books and their writers. And it's not something you can buy. Writers can make readers, their readers, passionate about what they write. Their future is assured. No amount of marketing will sell a bad book. And no lack of marketing will prevent a good book from finding its way in the world.
Wow, that's a really strong statement.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of good books fail. So,
yeah.
It's important to have a good book. It's also important to be able to promote it, be willing
right.
to promote it as much as possible.
But we've all heard these stories about somebody who threw together a book and is such a brilliant internet marketer that they blasted it onto the top of the charts and whatever.
Those charts are online charts.
Yes.
I know a writer, the Barnes & Noble site, apparently it's easier to do than Amazon, got a book on there just selling 4,000 copies, became a number one bestseller, 4,000 copies in a week's time.
And so then you have this, and then you can proclaim yourself a bestseller,
and that's great.
Yeah, but if the book actually sort of stinks, and you did that, would the book last? I mean, some people think it would, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, as with movies, word of mouth is the crucial thing, and now, thanks to technology, it was word of mouth.
Yeah.
And you could be, anybody in the world can be aware of it extremely quickly.
Right.
Another reason why now is a great time to be a writer.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a tremendous amount of freedom. What is it that a good agent actually does? So let's say you like a writer. What exactly are you going to do for them?
Okay, well, I think one of the gifts that I know you brought to what you did as an editor, Stephanie, and an agent bring to a book, is not just a vision of what somebody has, but what it might be.
Mm-hmm.
How to develop it into the best possible book. So it's the strongest possible manuscript or proposal when we submit it. That's very important. That's one of the things writers can't do for themselves because they're too close to it.
Yes.
Knowing which editors to submit books to, which editors and houses to submit books to, and which not to, also important.
Right. And so that would mean the right editor at the house, like this guy does this type of thing, this person has a hobby of trains, let's give him the train book, or, you know, that sort of thing. Or do you mean literally, like, this house is, something is funky right there now, there's a turmoil.
It could be the editor.
Yeah.
A lot of editors who don't return phone calls.
Right.
At the heart of what's, I think, the best metaphor for the agent-author relationship is that it's a working marriage with personal and professional aspects to it. And you want to hope that it'll be a good marriage. And at the heart of what an agent can help a writer do is create a working marriage between writer and editor. So one wants the best editors, the best editor possible for a particular book. And sometimes that editor is going to be more important than the money that the house can offer for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the house can be more important than the money they offer for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a matter of course, we do multiple submissions of nonfiction. And when all the numbers come in, and it's usually pretty clear which one to go with. But we always encourage writers who can to get themselves to New York and to meet with interested editors.
So they can get a kind of a gut feeling about who they feel they fit with.
Yeah. The editor and the house and the list and how many comparable books the editor has done, these are all comparable.
Yeah.
They're all very.
It's sort of for a new writer, that's sort of like a tip of the iceberg problem because, of course, it's like a first date. You're putting on your best clothes, your best handshake, your best smile, and then the, like, dysfunction comes later. You know?
If it comes.
Yes, if it comes, because, of course, some people do have very good publishing experiences.
And I think part of the role of the agent is to lubricate that relationship. While being an advocate for the author on questions and problems come up, but also enabling writers to be really realistic about what's possible and about a particular aspect of publishing or their book.
Right. Yeah, sometimes writers will ask me, is this normal? Is this the way it really goes? Because they don't know if something is wrong or right. They, you know, maybe they want it to go faster, or they want to have more of a say in, let's say, the jacket art or something, and they want to know how their expectations match the reality of the industry. And I think that an agent can be really helpful with that.
Certainly, one fundamental paradox of the industry is that every book is a book, and every book is different. Every book is a unique combination of contents, author, timing, design, price, agent, publisher, and how all these things come together and work in promotion, of course. It's going to work out differently for different people at different times. And there's, you know, only the past is certain, and people don't agree about that. But in terms of choosing a publisher, it can be better to be a big book at a little house than a little book at a big one where it'll certainly get lost.
Right.
So
because the resources must be shared among several books that are being published.
Well, among hundreds of books that are being published.
Right. At a big house like Simon & Schuster, it might be 400 books a year.
Yeah.
And at a little house, it might be 20 books a year.
I mean, that's why the role of authors and promotion has grown so much. Because regardless of who publishes the book, whether an author self-publishes it or Simon & Schuster publishes it, they're still going to be the most important aspect, the most important person involved with promotion. Both during the book's critical 1 to 3 month launch window and forever after.
Right. It seems to me from just my cursory examination of the industry that a lot of the literary agents come from either in-house where they were editors for a while and maybe worked themselves up to the senior editor level and then jumped ship, or they were in the marketing department and then decided that they wanted to be a little closer to the creative talent. And I don't know what you find in your experience, but some agents seem to really be wonderful with editorial content and less good at advising writers about marketing, and now others are really good at the marketing piece, but they're not so good at the front end. And do you find that writers should try to analyze that before they settle on an agent?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of wondering if they should just be so delighted that they've got an agent, they should just jump in.
I encourage writers to meet with agents if they can, because it's that chemistry, that working marriage thing. It's important, and you're not going to get it over the phone as much as you will in person, seeing their books and seeing their office. So there's that.
No, that's an interesting idea, to visit somebody's office.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can tell an awful lot about somebody in publishing by...
Editors as well as agents, both.
Yeah.
I think some of the books they've done, get a sense of the range of them, the experiences.
How busy they are. Yeah. Yeah. You know what, I have an impulse to open the line, it's about 20 of, and see if there are any questions from our listeners.
Stephanie, I'm not sure I answered the question you asked at the beginning of this interview, and that is, what excites me about a book?
Yeah.
I mentioned query letter's got to be good, the fourth part of a proposal.
Yeah.
Query letter, the idea itself, how well the author can write, and how big the author's platform is, how strong the promotion plan is, yes, and how well their sample chapter reads. The opportunity for there to be spin-off books. I encourage writers to practice nichecraft, N-I-C-H-E, nichecraft. To find a subject that they'll enjoy writing, books and promoting them, and they can build a career book by book, like Jay Levinson did with guerrilla marketing. That's a way to build a career.
Right, so that they're not switching from one area to another area to another area. They're sticking in a niche. Yeah.
Having to build a new market for every book.
Right.
Don Moss says it takes 5 books for an author to build an audience for their work.
Right.
And so that's really important, that writers have take the long view about their writing and their career, as well as the short view. They should look at their career not as one, but for 10 or 20. So regardless of where they are now, in time, they'll get where they want to go if they just keep at it.
Right, right. And you know what, as you move forward, the picture of what's possible gets clearer and sharper, and then you can navigate better. Yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because goals are, to my mind, extremely important.
Yeah.
And the easiest people to help are the people who have a clear sense of what it is they want. Because the more specific they can be about what they want, that enables me to help them get there, whatever that is.
Yep.
I mean, a crucial question I ask people is how much money they want in a year from their writing and speaking about that if they're going to give talks.
Yep.
That's a crucial number. Some people say they'd be happy making no money, and some people want millions.
Yeah.
The people who are happy making no money can write anything, because there's no economic consequences.
Right.
There's only one kind of book that people who want millions a year can write.
Yeah. And that's a bestseller. If there's any mystery about that, that's what that is.
Yeah, since that whole branding.
Yeah.
The way books are even packaged. All authors have how they line airport shelves and chain shelves.
Yeah. You know what, before we open the line, I'm just going to say one more thing, which is writers need to be curious. Because a lot of the information that we're talking about exists in the world, but you have to perceive it in order for it to impact the way you actually run your writing career. And what we're really talking about here is the business of writing, the career of writing, which is where your brilliant ideas and your creativity intersect with the marketing and sales of books. And everybody's in this business because books and ideas excite them. Otherwise, they'd be in a different business. They'd be on Wall Street or something. You know, but we're in this business because we love books. So that's like the fundamental bottom line, you know. And then everything else is on top of that, right?
I think writers have to feel the same way.
Yeah.
We're all in business, not because it's a path to wealth, because this is what we have to do. So that's really crucial.
Yeah, so what you're starting to do is you're starting to wake up and look around. And so if you say to yourself, oh, what is an agent? Then just go and look and see, what is an agent? Just see, it's like this, it's like this, it's like this, it's like this. I mean, we're pointing you in a direction, and rather than beating yourself up because you're a beginner and you don't know the answer to this question, now is the time to really just start paying attention. So, okay, enough verbiage on my part. I'm going to open the line. Hang on one second. Okay.
Presentation mode is on. Oops. Only organizers can be heard.
One more button.
Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard.
Okay, so if somebody has a question, just say your name and ask your question.
Hello.
Hi. Who's that?
Well, that was a good answer, won't we?
I'm hoping somebody has a question for Michael, because he really has been in this business for a long time and he's seen an awful lot.
My name is Howie, and I've got a question about multiple submissions to agents. I had never heard that before. I thought it was always you submit to one agent, give them an opportunity to respond or not. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? What if you get more than one person who's asking for a proposal back from you? And how you handle that?
Well, I think the basic notion would be just to send as many people as you want. First, the query letter, or maybe even the query letter with the word attachment, although agents can be wary about opening attachments from strangers. But in any case, query as many people as you want and send to as many people as you want. Just let them know that other people have it. There you may find agents who say they don't want multiple submissions, so either you go do it to them first or you do it to them last.
Okay.
You want to speed up the process as much as possible.
Right. Okay. I guess some of the sites I had seen had suggested that they would only take it not on a multiple submission basis, but...
So with those people, you have to make a different decision, right?
Yeah, agents vary, which is why I think it's important to look at their listings and what they say and how to approach them. That's really the simplest. I mean, we get people who submit things wrong every day, and it's like, well, the information's out there. We listen to a ton of directories.
Right.
Like people aren't looking at it, looking at our website. I'm talking to writers who can tell them that. So it's all there. Just follow what they ask for.
How long should somebody wait once they've sent something out to you, and you've given them permission to send it, let's say?
Yeah.
But then time is passing.
Right.
What should they do?
It's a universal question and an entirely reasonable one. Agents in directories say how long it takes. That's part of their listings. And if they don't get back to you, you'll make a note of that date or put a date on the calendar about when they say they'll get back to you. Put that date on your calendar or keep that letter handy, and then if you haven't heard from them by the date they say, then by all means call or email them. They'll say, well, your listing said this. By then, a lot of mailing time as well, and if you haven't heard them, then it's perfectly legitimate to contact them.
Right. And so you're not nagging them if you do that once a week from then on?
That, I think, would be nagging them. What's legitimate to ask is, they've had as long as they say they need,
yeah,
and haven't gone back to you. You know, when can you expect to hear?
Right.
And again, I think that's part of the justification for doing multiple submissions.
Right.
That process.
How many proposals do you get in every week, on average?
We get thousands of things a year, but we get them in different states. You know, query letters, phone calls, you know, email letters. I get that many proposals in a week.
How many? I'm sorry.
Also, again, that's really funny because agents don't get as many phone calls as they used to, because now everything's happening with email.
Right.
But increasingly, I'm getting stuff by email, but not that many, because I can only hope to make a living selling books to big publishers. And
so you screen the query letters more carefully?
Well, sure, just in terms of an author's ability to promote it and how commercial the idea is,
as
of course, their ability to write.
Right. So how much time can you actually devote to reading every week?
Oh, as much as it takes.
As much as it takes. Yeah.
I think one of my strengths is the fact that I'm extremely careful about what I submit. It's really crucial to me that every word be right, and that the proposal be as close to 100% as possible. And writers may think that's wonderful, and it is, but agents are doing it purely to serve themselves.
Right.
The worst thing that can happen is that agents send writers things which aren't for them or which aren't professionally submitted. Others are just going to tune them out.
Right, and also you only make a commission if you sell it. So you could be putting in hours and hours of work on something, and if it doesn't sell, that's it. You don't get anything.
And increasingly, I think it's going to tend to take more time for writers to spend developing their proposals and their books because of that reason. If they want to be published by New York houses, it's got to be impeccable.
So do you send a number of people off to independent editors and co-writers?
I certainly suggest that if it's needed.
Yeah.
And that's an important point. I mean, that's why I think, Stephanie, what you're doing is really valuable, ghostwriting, because there's a lot of people who, for example, they're the boomers. Right?
Yeah.
They're retiring, decide they have a book they want to write. But anybody who has a book's worth of information they want to communicate, should they go through the apprenticeship of being a writer?
Yeah.
Perhaps not. Maybe, but their value is what the assets they have are that body of information
mm-hmm.
and their ability to promote it.
Right.
It's not clear to me why they should spend 5-7 years becoming a professional writer if all they have is one book to write.
Right. I think it's sometimes just a matter of pride.
Well, it's up to them. One of the reasons why now is the best time ever to be a writer is that there's more ways to get a book written than ever.
Yeah.
You can write it yourself, you can work with an editor, you can work with a collaborator, you can hire a ghostwriter.
Right.
Whatever works.
Right.
You can expect Hollywood biographies to be written by celebrities.
Right, right. So once you... does anybody else have a question?
Hey, Stephanie, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. I didn't even know that we could be heard. Hi.
Who's that?
This is John Miles, John and Cynthia Miles. You edited the
book. Oh, yeah. How are you doing?
Very well.
Good.
Very well. My question is this. What is the reaction of agents to receiving a book that's been POD? So you know us a little bit, and you would know that we would be the type of people that would just sort of take the bull by the horns and get something up on the website and start to sell it. But what's the reaction of an agent to actually to get a quote-unquote finished book?
It's fine. If you've done that and it's test marketed, all the better.
Right.
The more copies you've sold of a POD book before you approach agents, the better.
Okay.
But it's still going to depend on your promotion plan. I think one challenge about POD books is unless you pay for editing and cover art, your books will tend not to be edited, copy edited, or designed well.
Right.
They may not be, but like that. I'm not an expert on it. But before you go with any house, you want to make sure what services they'll do for you, and if you can pay more for them to do additional services, if that's what you want. Particularly concerned if you're going to have a POD house do it for free, then you can't expect any kind of significant help with the manuscript, the proposal, and it's with the book, and it's. It shouldn't look like amateur night, but that really will defeat you.
Well, we take that to heart very significantly. That's why we actually, I even sort of tracked down and found Stephanie, and we sent her the manuscript, and I'm very serious about cover art and very intently listening to everything you're having to say.
Well, it's got to be impeccable before it goes to any agent or publisher, whatever that takes.
Yeah, do you have to do the best that you possibly can do with your resources.
Would it be better to send the manuscript prior to going to POD, or should we do both?
Well,
I'm trying to be innovative.
What kind of book it is. You know, I'm giving short shrift to fiction, and Elizabeth does the fiction of the agency, and this kind of parallel worlds that are different, and narrative nonfiction, for example. But what's the title of your book, sir?
It's called The Promise.
And the subtitle?
It doesn't actually have. Well, actually, that's a darn good question. We don't have a subtitle.
Okay.
It's called The Promise.
The subtitle should say what The Promise is. What kind of book is it?
It's a story of a woman who led an extraordinary life.
Okay, well, so
it's actually a
nonfiction. It's a memoir.
Yeah. It is a memoir, yes,
okay.
But it's exactly.
Okay. It's all in the writing there. Agents and editors only read far enough to make a decision about it. It should read like a novel. So it should make the people come alive, use details, and use stories, and have an interesting setting, ideally. It's like writing a novel, only it happens to be true.
Stephanie, you've read it. I don't know if you remember it.
Of course I remember it. It's a really extraordinary story about a young woman who meets an older woman who lived in who grew up in an artist community and knew all of these amazing spiritual figures from history and artists and painters and so forth. And as she was dying, they formed a relationship, and it continued. Actually, this relationship continues beyond her death. So it's a spiritual theme as well.
Well, we know about that stuff in California. Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes we'll go back to another and say, well, that book's a little too woo-woo for me.
Yeah.
But it's still, I mean, that's certainly on trend. If you look at TV shows and ancient spirituality, it's a good time to be writing books like that. It's all about the reading experience. For narrative nonfiction, Elizabeth likes to see the best three chapters of it, or the first three, if that's all they're written. The best three chapters and outline, of course, with an SASC. Whereas for novels, you just like to see the first 10 pages.
Right. But it's not a problem for you to take a bound book.
No.
Yeah, because it's actually quite portable and so forth. Yeah.
If it's done professionally and there's enough promotional animation behind it, it's easy.
Yeah.
All the heavy lifting's been done. All it has is to do is slap a title on it, a cover on it, an imprint, whatever, and then stick it out there.
Yeah.
All the development work is gone.
Yeah.
So that's the good news.
Right. So,
So it would be an indication of a level of seriousness that we're trying to approach it in every professional way possible.
Yes, that's what that would indicate.
You know, I spoke about writing proposals. Maybe I didn't talk about writing proposals, but they usually have a sample chapter and an outline and an introduction with the kind of information about the book. And the kind of outline you'd write will depend on whether or not, for example, a book is a narrative book. If you have a complete manuscript, which I tell people to try and do on a first book that's a memoir.
But that's not necessary for a book that's not a memoir.
Correct. And 90% of books are sold with proposals. But the real criteria for how much to send is, we're sending more to an agent or editor more excited.
Right.
If you're approaching editors, if you're approaching agents, then give them what they want to see. For the kind of book you're writing.
Right. They can always ask for more.
Exactly. If they want for more, they'll ask for more. And it's great that you finished it. In the proposal book, there's a list of 12 reasons why to write the manuscript before you write a proposal.
That's really interesting, because a lot of people don't want to spend the time doing that.
Or have the money, sure.
Yeah.
For a hot topic, something that's in the news today, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
But if it's a subject that's not going away, nobody else is going to write your book. There's just a lot of reasons why it's better to have a manuscript first. And the test marketing thing is sort of a piece of that.
Right. Actually, as a writer myself, I find that half the time I don't know what I'm really trying to say until I'm most of the way through. And then I go back and I rewrite the beginning. I'm like, oh, wow, there's my book.
That's one reason why novels have to be finished.
Yeah.
Because whatever you say, if you haven't finished it, who knows how it'll turn out.
Right.
The ending of it, you should affect the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Since Stephen, who teaches at the Santa Barbara Conference, says that a book is like a cake, it sags in the middle. You start a high point and end a high point. And you know that end. And I know all the writers who will write the ending first, and will write the book until they have a good ending.
Yeah.
But people approach it all kinds of ways.
What kind of contracts do most agents have with writers who sign with them, so to speak?
I'm quite sure I didn't answer that question. The agent book has three different ones, and ours is on our website. But they call for like a 30, 60-day termination. You have one day in the year to terminate it, and then it goes on for another year if you don't terminate it. Then agents vary.
If an agent sells a book, that's it. They're on that book forever, right?
Yes.
So even if you don't do your next book with them, some agents have like a book by book contract, right?
Right. Well, I think in fact all agents do, regardless of what the contract says. Writers can leave an agent at any time.
Right.
We say ask for 60 days in our agreement, but that's only if work is out, we have time to get it back before it ends.
If
we don't have anything out, then it's really effective immediately.
Right.
Nobody wants to hold, no editor or agent can hold a writer prisoner.
Right. That's very important for writers to know. You have power and rights over your work.
Right.
You know, an agent is there to help you. An agent is there to help you navigate, and they are invested in your success. They are probably as invested in your success as you are. I mean, not quite to the same degree because it's your work, but their financial situation is reflected by your success. So,
how important passion is to the process. But since you can't be certain of a book's financial success, loving the process is important. But that there's this whole invisible chain between writers and readers that involves a publishing house and a lot of people. And if they cast more than 100 people, will somehow or other touch or be involved with each book. And you want them to have as much passion when they do that. And that passion all starts with the writer, followed by an agent, followed by an editor. So, and then that should go through the publishing house, but it all starts with the writer.
Yes, and these are all people who stand up and stand for these ideas, you know. And I've sat through many, many editorial and marketing meetings in-house when I still was an acquisitions editor, and there were some editors who got up and spoke so eloquently on behalf of a writer and a book. And that really does begin with the presentation that you make via an agent.
Yes,
you're like a matchmaker, Michael. It's a big wedding we're going to.
Well, no, an editor is really an in-house agent for the book. They have to push the book through the house with as much enthusiasm as possible. At the BEA, the Book Sales Convention, which I always encourage writers to go to, it's an essential experience. Last year, Jonathan Bingham gave a wonderful talk about Sacred Games, this novel Harper was doing. And I couldn't wait to read it. And he was talking to hundreds of people, and I'm sure he excited a lot of them about the book's potential. And it did become a bestseller. But it's for the love of the game.
So in the midst of that process, a good agent is staying in contact with the editor and making sure that everything's going well.
Sure, the production, editorial, promotion questions
yeah.
come up.
Yeah.
Problems can come up, a faulty manuscript, a poor cover, things happen.
So you make sure that you help the authors to satisfy the needs of the publisher,
indeed.
And you help the publisher satisfy the needs of the author.
Indeed, yeah.
That's beautiful.
And that's not something writers can do for themselves because they don't have the experience and knowledge it will take to do that.
Yeah. We're kind of at the end of our hour now. I wonder if you have any final thought you might want to impart.
A couple things about commitment. The new cartoon shows a man and a woman sitting on a couch talking, and the man is saying, look, I'm not talking about a lifetime commitment. I'm talking about marriage. The successful author is a lifetime commitment. When I used to give this advice to writers, he would say that if anything can stop you from being a writer, let it. If nothing can stop you, do it, and you'll make it.
That's a good one. I can hear somebody out there still laughing. Well, thank you very much, Michael. So again, your website is larson-pomada.com, and also you have another website for the San Francisco Writers Conference, and that's, I think, sfwriters.org. Is that correct?
Correct.
Great. So people can go and check those both out and find out what's going on and take advantage of all the resources. This has been really invaluable. I think it's great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I think it's been so valuable.
Great. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.